Welcome to the Turbo Time Podcast. I'm your host, online editor Tim Lukak. Today, we're joined by the two Mythbusters, Klaus Brunn and Rainer Kurz, for a deeper dive into the myths surrounding new energy storage technologies and how they will supposedly solve grid problems. Klaus is Director of Research and Development at Elliott Group, and Rainer is Manager of Gas Compression Engineering at Solar Turbines. I'd like to welcome you both and thank you for your longstanding contributions to the magazine.
Thank you very much, Tim, and it's a pleasure to be on with you.
Yeah, Tim, thanks for the kind introduction and happy to be here.
A key part of the issue here is that the industry needs to take advantage of existing energy storage technologies, as you both wrote about in your article. So how can we use existing storage assets?
I think we ought to have a little bit of a fundamental understanding first of why we're even talking about storage. Basically, energy is being stored in the form of fossil energy, has been for millions and millions of years. So basically, fossil energy is stored energy. The issue nowadays is one that's very different, in that we are producing electricity from non-fossil sources, from alternative energy sources such as solar and wind, which are not steady. So these are carbon-free energy sources, and that's fantastic. The problem with these sources is that they're not steady. So at times you're producing too much energy or electricity, at other times you're not producing enough. And so basically you need, in your system, you need something that allows you to level your energy supply to a demand. And there is a demand curve. Energy storage, as we're talking about it from an alternative energy perspective nowadays, is the desire and the demand of the world to decarbonize our energy sources. The only way to do that is with solar, wind, and nuclear. And so you need energy storage or capacitance in the system. That can be handled with batteries. And so that's a commercially available technology that can be handled with hydrogen storage. And then there is a number of newer technology, mostly thermal mechanical energy storage systems, that are becoming commercially available. So the fundamental problem here is, in addition to the cost that you have for your energy provider, being the wind and solar, you also now have a cost of storage. And that cost of storage can easily double the cost of storage energy that you're producing. So for example, in the United States, industrial energy electricity is produced somewhere around 5 cents a kilowatt hour. If you try to store that, you're adding somewhere between 5 to 10 cents per kilowatt hour to your cost of electricity. So now your cost of electricity is not 5 to 10 cents, but it's 15 cents. Now you can make the argument, okay, my solar or my wind is curtailed energy, it's free. You can argue about that for a long time. It's really never free, but let's say it is free. Then you're back down to 5 to 10 cents per kilowatt hour. But that's not really fair, because you had to pay for all these facilities in addition to your original power plant. So your original power plant is your wind turbine or your solar power plant, right? But you now have to add all this additional hardware. And that runs in the range nowadays from somewhere of $2,000 to $10,000 per kilowatt installed. And so that's the issue. And so what we were trying to point out is that there is actually an existing infrastructure network in the United States that provides you with energy storage, and that can be driven up and down based on demand. The United States currently roughly gets in the high 50% of its electricity actually from natural gas. And that natural gas comes out of pipelines, and there is a tremendous amount of storage in pipelines. Rainer, jump in here.
Another piece of it is also the storage capacity and the dispatchability of different storage methods. And that's really where a lot of the discussions right now are about. If you have to keep the lights on in a city like Los Angeles, batteries simply won't do it. There are people who will calculate you the height of the mountains of batteries that you need just for a city like Los Angeles. For the storage of large amounts of energy, you will need different storage methodologies than if you just need to store whatever 10 megawatt here or there. The other question is, okay, so I'm going to store the energy. How fast can I remove it? How much power can I actually remove from my storage system? A lot of the storage systems have to be built. They're not physically available. The main exception on the last storage site is basically hydropower. But unfortunately, the geology of most parts of the world don't just allow you to build a dam and wait until it rains. You really have to look into, okay, so what do we have available right now? What are the storage systems that are currently in existence? And all of a sudden you realize, okay, it's pipelines and it's pipeline-related storage systems.
From a cost perspective, batteries, if you have residential battery storage, that is somewhere around the $1,500 per kilowatt hour. If you're looking at utility battery storage, that is claimed to be as low as $200 per kilowatt hour, but actually the numbers that I'm seeing are floating more around $300 to $500. So that's quite a bit of money. If you look at other alternative energy storage technologies, such as thermal energy storage, you're looking at mechanical, they're all great. They tend to be in a similar cost range as batteries or higher, but worse, they have a round-trip efficiency that's significantly lower. Most of these technologies have round-trip efficiencies of 50%, 60%, 70%, or some technologies like hydrogen energy storage have as low as something like 30 or 40% round-trip efficiency. That means you're wasting a tremendous amount of energy. Again, you can justify that if you say my electricity is free and is curtailed energy. But you can also make the argument, maybe I need a better energy distribution infrastructure to make sure I can take my electricity somewhere where it's needed when I'm producing it. Okay, that's all wonderful, but we have the storage infrastructure in place. Natural gas is here. Natural gas is not going to go away. It's probably going to be utilized for the next 20 or 30 years, if not longer. But there is tremendous energy storage capacity in the system, and there is also a tremendous amount of flexibility on the supply side, because there is thousands of gas wells in the United States, and if you need to produce a little bit more, you can actually produce. There is some flexibility in bringing up production on natural gas. There is flexibility in storing natural gas in underground caverns and storage tanks and so on. And then there is the capacity of natural gas being stored in the pipeline itself.
People always forget about the time factor, meaning you don't snip with your finger and all of a sudden you have a huge salt cavern that stores something. The Germans are running right smack into that problem. Their politicians decreed that by 2024, you can't install new gas-fired heaters for your house. Nobody figured out where to get all that heat pumps, and in particular, people to install them from, to really make this happen. You can't just say, oh yeah, this is a great idea. Year, come next year, we all implement that. It's just the dimensions of things that we're talking about. Way too big to assume that you can get brand new devices or at the massive scale that you need to come into existence overnight. And that's also why Klaus is absolutely right. Natural gas is not going to go away simply because even if you wanted to, you cannot replace it fast enough.
A typical natural gas combined cycle plant in the United States produces somewhere around 750 to 1 gigawatt. So that's a typical size plant. That there's hundreds of these plants all over the United States. So 1 gigawatt plant, a typical green field installation price floats somewhere around $1,500 to $1,700 per kilowatt installed. That means you build one of these plants and you're looking at about $1.5 billion. That's a good chunk of money right there. The current target by the U.S. Department of Energy for cost of energy storage for capacity is $2,500 per kilowatt installed. That's not what they cost right now. But that's the target. That means if you need to provide an equivalent storage to this one natural gas combined cycle plant, you're looking at $2.5 billion. That's a lot of money. It's always easy to say, oh, we want to do all this green stuff and whatever. But when it hits people's pocketbook, opinions change very, very quickly, as we're seeing in Europe right now, where, electricity prices are now up to 30, 40 cents for consumer electric per kilowatt hour, whereas in the United States, we're still floating between 10 and 15 cents.
And I mean, just to reemphasize some of these things, we wrote that Mythbuster on battery storage, I think in 2018. I think we got it right.
And nothing has improved. Actually, if anything, it's gotten worse, because there was a belief in 2018, 2019 that battery costs would continue to drop, which they did until about 2020, at which point they reached the bottom, and now they've actually come up. And all these other technologies haven't really matured to the level of commercially available as we had expected, even in 2018. The only technologies that I see currently that are easily available is compressed air energy storage. You can purchase that. The Rankine cycle pumped heat technology, basically we're talking about heat pumps in combination with heat engines. That technology is also somewhat commercially available. A lot of the other technologies that were floated around 4 or 5 years ago didn't make it commercially. And the other thing that everybody's talking about is hydrogen. And hydrogen isn't really a good energy storage medium in the sense that its round trip efficiency is really low. You have to make hydrogen and you lose about 10 to 20% of your electricity in that process, and then you have to convert that hydrogen back to electricity and you lose another 50% of your energy in that process. So it's really not a very good storage medium.
And also depends, obviously, in this hydrogen discussion, also a lot of things, one of the things that gets lost is, okay, so you make hydrogen, what are you going to use it for? And that goes right into what Klaus said. Hydrogen is not a particular great storage media or a particular great way of transporting energy, although a hydrogen pipeline, if it's done right, is still more efficient in terms of the energy consumed per energy transported than, for example, the currently available electrical technology. If you if you start out with electricity and then convert it into hydrogen and then transport it for 1,000 miles and then you put it in the power plant and then make electricity out of it, that's where the inefficiencies come in. That's where the round trip efficiency that Klaus was talking about is really hurting you. And that there are really two things that follow out of that. First of all, the question is going to become, is hydrogen really going to be used predominantly for power generation, or is it going to be used for applications where you actually need a concentrated heat source? And the other thing, sort of as a corollary, if you will, is that the discussion on whether blue hydrogen or green hydrogen or actually a gas-fired power plant with carbon capture and sequestration is really the thing of that will dominate the discussion in the next 30 or 40 years. Because from an energy perspective, there's a lot of advantages using blue hydrogen or using carbon capture on existing machines. And once you do that, you can, for example, use all the storage methods that you want, because then you're essentially dealing with natural gas.
Thanks for tuning in to part one of this episode on energy storage systems with the Mythbusters, Klaus Brunn and Rainer Kurz. I'm online editor Tim Lukak. Be sure to tune in to part two next week. Thanks for listening.